Good evening. Welcome back. Thank you for joining us here on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with author Joey Albrecht about a book that she's worked on. It's just been released here on, I believe, the 14th, out and available. It's called A Deadly Haunting. Ms. Albrecht is an award-winning writer, director, producer, and voice director who's created programming for national networks, national cable syndication, corporations, and individuals for the past 25 years, most of which have been in the top 10 of the Nielsen ratings and received critical acclaim. Today, her focus is on writing books and raising funds for her family feature films. Our other guest is a supernatural survivor. Her story is being portrayed in this book, A Deadly Haunting. You can check out the website, adeadlyhaunting.com, to find more about their story, more about the case, and see startling photographs and evidence from this case, including the pictures of the mirror and the messages that they would receive. From 1984 to 1990, Debbie Moffett and her family were haunted by a demonic entity. For 6 years, they were denied any semblance of a normal existence. They were isolated from friends and family, and they were left to suffer in secrecy. They were prisoners in their own home. We're going to open up phone lines in hour four. If you've had a malevolent haunting and you'd like to share your real life encounter, or if you have questions for our guests, that'll be the time to call in. We'll take a break and we'll come back and hear more about A Deadly Haunting on Coast to Coast AM. Good evening. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host this evening. My name is Dave Schrader. And if you enjoy the supernatural, then please join me Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. till midnight, as I host Darkness Radio. We continue the supernatural journey. Ghosts, UFOs, monsters, myths, legends, and more. You can listen to us at darknessradio.com and then keep tuned right in, because right after our show begins a live stream of Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. For more information about Darkness Radio, check out darknessradio.com. This evening, we're speaking with a real-life supernatural encounter survivor. One of the most intense and bizarre stories I've ever heard in 9 years. Debbie Moffett is our guest, along with Joey Albrecht, the author of the book A Deadly Haunting. They're here to share this bizarre tale. This story has gotten absolutely unnerving. People, I'm watching people tweet and Facebook me about it and email me about it, just getting unnerved, saying sleep is going to be elusive tonight for sure, hearing this kind of story. One of the questions from John Mallon in Oklahoma City comes in through an email, and he says, Debbie, why didn't you guys just call a Catholic priest in to investigate and, if necessary, exorcise the house?
We did. We called in a priest, a local priest, to come in. He came to the house. He walked into the front door. We brought him here to bless the house, and then my mother-in-law was going to explain everything to him, what was going on. He came into the house. He went into the foyer, stood there, looked around the house. He took the holy water, made the sign of the cross, said some prayers. He said, okay, that's it. I have to go. And my mother-in-law said, don't you have to go to each room and bless each room? And he said, no, I can take care of it right here. And she said, well, I'd like to just tell you what's going on in the house. And she started to tell him a little bit what was going on in the house. And during this time, he was very fidgety. And she only got a little bit out of it. She couldn't even tell him much about it. And he looked at me and he said, women at this age, they go a little, and he made his finger go like the crazy sign on his ear. They go a little like this. They go a little crazy. I have to go. And he literally almost ran out the front door to his car.
Now, that has to be more unnerving almost than anything else you're dealing with, because here's a man of the clergy, a man of the cloth, whose job it is, you would think, as a spiritual leader to help and be strong and fortified. And we watch The Exorcist, right? Father Marin, right? He's going to stand there till the end of time. This guy just couldn't wait to get the hell out of that house.
Yeah. And, you know, this devastated my mother-in-law, because the truth is, if it wasn't for her deep love and faith in God, she never would have been sane. This would have drove her absolutely insane. But she had such faith in God and loved God so much, she knew he was going to protect her in the long run. She maybe had to go through something, but she knew he was going to protect her. So that's what kept her going. So to see this priest run out of the house, it really devastated her.
Now, she had a deep religious background and belief in this. As it's amping up, how about you and your husband and your father-in-law? Were you guys as deeply devoted, and were you as confident that this would end and that it would all end well? Or were you afraid things were starting to get out of control?
They were starting to get out of control. I believe in God, a strong belief in God. But I also believe God lets things happen for certain reasons. And he lets you make your own choices in life. So I felt personally that the entity could not hurt me. And part of that reason was because I believed in God so deeply. I knew, I hate to say like this, but I knew he had my back. You know, I knew, hey, nothing's going to hurt me.
And it did. You did ask Mr. Entity. You said, you didn't even ask. You made a demand and a command. You said, you will not bother me or my child. And it agreed to leave you all alone, but it was going to go after Lee, your mother-in-law, no matter what.
It said she belonged to him. He felt that he had the right that she belonged to him. And so that I had no business saying that he couldn't have her if she was his.
Now, my understanding, and again, it may be limited and just from the things that I've read, Joey, is that demons never were in human form. The belief was that this demonic entity was at one time a monk that lived here on Earth in a human form. And it was trying to get its blood sacrifice. It was a Satan worshiper back then, and it was Lee's soul had been promised to him before. Now, what have you found? I mean, have you found any correlations that demonics not always fall into the category of having been just eternals that never walked as a human, but some have been known to actually have existed here at one point among us?
Well, you know, who's to say? My opinion is that yeah, it's possible for them to incarnate and to walk among us. But, you know, we don't have any proof. There's no way to prove that. You know what I'm saying?
Right. But I was just curious if you'd come across that. Again, that was relatively new news to me, that this monk character from the past would have this strong of a hold
into
the future.
Mr. Entity, now this is how I interpreted it.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Entity said that they walk the halls of the Holy Order together. I didn't interpret it that he was in human form. I interpreted it that his presence was in that monastery. And when they walked the halls together, he was with them with their evil intentions. That's the way I interpreted it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's great insight. And actually, I have heard very disturbing stories. Demonologist Adam Bly, Father Malachi Martin, John Zaffis, people that we know and have heard stories of, have talked about some monasteries, some of the nunneries that have been overrun by evil forces in them, where you would think they would be the safest. I guess it's more of a prize to claim those places. So if this was part of that story and this demon was the one running side by side with this monk, bringing him in through this satanic world, it would make more sense to why this tie would be so strong.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Or he may have possessed someone in a physical body.
Right.
That's true.
I give you a lot of credit. I mean, again, you sound extremely calm about this story, and knowing what you went through, I can't believe you were able to keep your faculties about you. I mean, was there ever a thought, especially with having a baby in the house, and it wasn't just one, didn't you end up having a few?
Then I had twins.
Wow, so now you've got three babies. Did you ever think, you know what, honey, I love your mom, I love your dad, but it's time we get our own place because this place is being overrun by something else and we need to take our kids out of here and protect them?
I knew that I was going to be fine. My husband was going to be fine. My children were going to be fine. I knew if I left, it would kill my mother-in-law. So I would have to sacrifice her. And I couldn't do that.
But if it's truly demonic, how could you be confident? I mean, your mother-in-law thought she was protected. She was a devout Christian and a devout Catholic, I think you said. And she wasn't protected. How could you take the word of a demon that, oh, yeah, yeah, no, you and your kids are perfectly fine?
I didn't take his word. I knew what I felt.
Okay.
I didn't take his. He could talk to me all he wanted. Whatever he told me, I didn't have to believe it, because you never know if they're lying to you. But I knew this was not going to hurt me or my family, but it was going to kill Ma. And I couldn't let it kill her.
I think Debbie's conviction, coupled with the fact that she did believe very strongly in God, coupled with the fact that she was not afraid of the entity, you know, in my opinion, is why he couldn't bother her. And he even wrote on the mirror at one point, "Debbie gets in my way."
And it, I mean, it had shown some pretty superior power before. Why wouldn't it just move you away if it could get to her? I guess that's just, again, I know your conviction, but it seems like the rules don't really play into effect here. You felt good and protected and secure, but she, who was a devout Christian, wasn't. That to me, I think, and that's why a lot of our listeners feel so unnerved by the story, is because the people that should have been most protected were not.
Well, I think that's the fear factor. Because she was so deathly afraid of this and went the effect of it, then it had control over her.
Do you think if she would have just done like you did, Debbie, and had she put her foot down and said, "Enough of this, you will not have me, you will not continue to harass my family, you will leave me alone," had she stood up to it and not shown fear, do you believe that the outcome would have been different?
No. I think in this lifetime, she had to go through this, that she had to make different changes, different choices to show that she had changed. And until she did, she was vulnerable.
All right. You've got all of this going on in the house now. You've got things apporting into your home. If you leave the home, the demon is letting you know that it's with you, because you will get home and find articles from wherever you were waiting for you. You find messages scrawled on the mirrors. When does it start getting really frightening to you? When do you said it's starting to spin out of control? The priest is of no help to you. The rest of the, what really starts to key you up and make you realize that this is a losing battle, and it's just a matter of time till it gets your mother-in-law?
I think it was my mother-in-law finally said that we could start bringing people in to try to get rid of this. And I think when we started bringing in so many different people, we brought in people from universities, Thelma Moss, Carrie Gaynor, the Warrens, Ed and Lorraine Warren came, Lloyd Arbach sent Chris Chacon to come to investigate it. All different people came, and they couldn't get rid of it. I think I knew at that point this, what we were going to do. How were we going to protect ourselves? How were we going to get rid of it? And we couldn't get rid of it because someone wanted it there. That's what we were told. One of the famous people who came to the house said, "You can't get rid of this because someone is giving it permission to be in your house."
Really? So the plot thickens. Now you start to realize that maybe one of the four of you is allowing this to happen. Do you start to wonder if, because its focus is so intently focused on your mother-in-law, that she is in fact somehow allowing this to happen?
You wonder. You see, that's what I mean about questions were never answered. And then when the entity did, he apported a spearhead, and they apported it in bed with my father-in-law, my mother and father-in-law in the same bed. The entity apported it so that it was laying next to my father-in-law's leg when he woke up. It scared him because it was cold, and he jumped up and woke us all up. And it's about a foot long, and it's very strange looking. It's metal. It's handmade. You can see it's hand-forged. The entity informed us he expected my father-in-law to do a blood ritual on my mother-in-law, and he even gave us the instructions on the mirror how he wanted it performed. And I took possession of
a blood ritual. Explain to our listeners what a blood ritual means.
It's some type of what he wanted was, it was some type of a ritual that they would do step by step. He told step by step how it had to be done, but it had to use my mother-in-law's blood.
So basically, it was trying to instruct your father-in-law to kill your mother-in-law,
right,
and how to do so using this spear.
Yes, and I took possession of the spear. I didn't leave it with my father-in-law. I took possession of it, and I told the entity, I went in the mirror, and I said to him, "You're not going to have any blood ritual. You're not going to use this on my mother-in-law." And it got so mad, it blew out all the windows in the upstairs.
All right, let me get to this point too, because I know you've told me this in the past. You had to be cautious with where your mother sat, where your mother-in-law sat, where she slept. What was this demon doing? Why did you have to be so cautious of every move your mother-in-law made?
It would booby trap things with knives. It would put a knife so that if she sat, and she had a favorite chair at the dining room table she would always sit in, and it would make the knife go up from the bottom so that if she sat, she would sit on a knife. It would put knives under the pillow, so if she laid back and put her head on the pillow, it would stab her in the neck. I have to tell you one thing it did, which is this entity liked to play games also. It liked to just torment you. My mother-in-law stayed most of the time in the bedroom, laying in the bed, because if I wasn't with her, she was vulnerable. So she said to me, "I feel like I'm glued to this bed." Well, she wakes up the next morning, and the entity had glued her to the sheet. We had to take the sheet and pull it off. We had to use, like, an Elmer's glue and glued her to the sheet.
What unbelievable power this thing has.
It was unbelievable, and no one could seem to stop it.
Joey, we've only got about a minute and a half left in this segment. You're writing this book. You're sharing this story. You realize that this is some kind of demonic. A lot of the demonologists, exorcists, and people that we've talked to Coast and on Darkness Radio have said that sometimes by giving these things power, talking about them and giving them a name, that empowers them more. Are you concerned by sharing this story that it may, in fact, reawaken or empower this thing to start having influence in other people's lives? Or do you feel that was its story? That was its timeline?
I think that was its purpose, was specifically we. And, you know, as I say in the book and I like to say in these interviews, you know, it's everyone loves to get scared, and that's fine. But, you know, if you really feel something that is foreboding around you, you know, you have to remember that feeling is a lie, that they are not powerful. And if you really believe that they're not powerful and, you know, you're not letting yourself get affected by it, then I don't believe that they can hurt you.
We're going to take another break in a few seconds here. And when we come back, we'll find out more about Mr. Entity, what this creature was, and how it would communicate if they wouldn't pay attention to the mirrors, or if they remove the soap, because this entity was very determined to get their attention, very determined to communicate with them incessantly. The book is called A Deadly Haunting. It just came out this past week. It's available through Amazon.com, available through all of the booksellers. You can find more information about the book, about the story, and see evidence from this case, including photographs of the spear and the writing on the mirror, by going to adeadlyhaunting.com. Again, that's adeadlyhaunting.com. We'll be back with more on Coast to Coast AM right after this. Good evening. Welcome back to the show, A Deadly Haunting. That's the topic we're talking about this evening, a brand new book that just came out this past week. Author Joey Albrecht is here, and real-life survivor Debbie Moffitt sharing their tale. Now, in the last segment, one of our listeners, John Mallon, wrote in, and he had asked about sending in an exorcist to investigate, or a priest to investigate and possibly exorcise the home. He did shoot me a follow-up email, and I wanted to mention this because I do think there's some important points in this. Dave, thank you for reading my comment on the air. I'm a Catholic theologian, and I'm very sorry they got such an incompetent priest who, through his own fear or ignorance, failed to help them. He should have notified the diocese for some expert help in these matters, but this is typical of the times in which this took place. The Vatican has now seen to it that exorcists are being trained. If the mother-in-law was a devout Catholic, it does make sense that the demon would want to kill her. But it is regrettable that the priest brought in was so out of his depth. I'm not unnerved by the story, just saddened at the unnecessary suffering. Please don't leave your listeners with the impression that the priest they brought in is representative of the whole church. Thanks again, John Mallon in Oklahoma City. Great point, John. However, having covered these stories for the last 8-9 years and having read about them for the last 20 25 years of my life, it does seem that the clergy has been grossly undertrained to deal with this type of malevolent haunting. And as you so eloquently stated, for people that question, is there really a demonic rising? Is there really something to the paranormal? You have to realize that the Vatican has given that answer by increasing the amount of exorcists, where I believe there used to be around 8 to 10 exorcists for the entire United States. Now, from my understanding, there are 2 to 3 in almost every state that are fully trained in exorcism. The Vatican has full-on classes on exorcism. They have an on-staff exorcist that is there all day long helping people. So there is something, and they are taking it more seriously. And if you are having problems, if you are a victim of a malevolent or demonic haunting, and you don't get help the first time, continue to ask for help. Get the help, because it does exist out there. You can always reach out to me at dave@darknessradio.com. I've got a nice network of different people involved in the paranormal field whose job it is to try to help you and get you some immediate relief if you cannot find it on your own. dave@darknessradio.com. And we will do our best to help you if you're having problems yourself. There are great resources out there. You're not alone. We'll take a break. We're going to come back, and we'll continue talking with our guests, Joey Albrecht and the real-life survivor of the story, Debbie Moffitt, right after this. A deadly haunting. 6 years, our guest, Debbie Moffitt, lived under an oppressive force, threatening to kill her mother-in-law and take back a soul that it felt it owned. Strange encounters, apportations, things appearing in their home, strange things going on, blowing out of windows, destroying cabinets and property that they had. The mother-in-law, Lee, was not safe. They would have to check under pillows because there would be knives propped there. Underneath seats that her mother-in-law would sit on, there would be knives waiting for her to sit on, to kill her, to hurt her, to maim her. And this entity was not going to be ignored. Mr. Entity wanted your attention, Debbie. And if you didn't have that bar of soap at that mirror for it to communicate with you, what would it do?
It actually, before it started writing on the mirror, at the times when we would take the soap away, it would actually carve symbols into the walls. It destroyed our house. Mr. Entity ripped wallpaper off. He burned his symbol. He had a mark that was, I would think, it was his mark. It was a triangle with like a kite tail in the middle at the bottom. This, I never could find out what this really meant or what it was. I have a friend, two friends, Todd and Jamie, who are still trying to research it to find out what it means. But that was like his signature. And he put it in every room of the house. It would be either written on the walls or gouged into the cement. The plaster. He burned it in the wall upstairs in my mother-in-law's room over her bed. It was like 4 foot tall. He burned it right into the wall. It destroyed our house. He had one time we were watching television together and we heard like water. And I got up, walked towards the hall, and there's water everywhere. And I look, and on the stairs coming downstairs, there was actually like a waterfall, like you see out in the nature, a waterfall was actually coming down the stairs, flooding the house out. One time he had water coming out all the light fixtures. You could just see the water just dripping from the light fixtures. There were no leaks in the house. There was no water anywhere, but there it was.
Just there, this water just showing up as though it was streaming from a pipe or a broken hose.
Right.
Now, you mentioned the image, which is on the cover of the book. And it's a triangle with like a strange little tail to it. It almost appears like it's mocking the Holy Trinity. The Trinity also represented by the triangle for the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. And it seems to almost be adding almost what looks to be like a devil tail.
Do you know you're the first person that has ever mentioned that? And it does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it does.
So, it might be just a way of it mocking what you're doing, and especially mocking that it doesn't fear the religious aspect and why it continued after your mother-in-law.
Right, it hated religious statues. It would, all her religious statues, first it would take them and it would form them into the triangle. And then she'd put them back, and then it would start breaking their heads off and breaking their left arm off. And it would always be the same arm that it would break off on all her religious statues. It just hated religious statues.
This thing is unbelievable in scope of what it was capable of doing.
And what was strange about it was, like you read about other hauntings, or I've read things where things would happen once a week, once a month. This would happen from the time I got up to the time we went to bed, talking on the mirror. And if you didn't talk to it on the mirror, I was the one that would have to talk to it because everybody else was afraid of it. So I would have to keep it going in conversation, because if it focused on talking to me through the mirror, it stopped destroying the house. If ever I didn't talk to it, it would like destroy everything. So I had to keep it talking.
Was there a point that you got to where you wanted to, you know, I guess, how's the best way to approach this? You challenged it before, but was there getting to a point where you felt that another confrontation had to take place and that you needed to get this thing gone once and for all?
Yes, I told it to leave. It told me it had permission to be here. It didn't have to leave.
And in the book, I know we don't want to give away everything, because I'm certainly, I know we want to sell your book as well. In your book, do you detail who gave permission?
Yes.
For this?
Yes.
And it was a member of your family?
Yes.
Were you surprised to find out that that's what was going on?
Yes and no. I was surprised in the fact that anyone would do that, but not surprised who did it.
In the next hour, we're going to open up phone calls. You can call in if you have suffered or dealt with a malevolent haunting. If you are still dealing with a malevolent haunting and have a story to share, we'd like to hear from you. But if you have questions for our guests, they will be here with us for the next hour as well to try to answer some of your questions. So we will open up phone lines in the next hour. Now, you took extensive photographs and evidence through this. Did you ever videotape any of the activity that took place?
One lady came, videotapes of a bed that flipped over in one of the bedrooms, but I don't know what happened to that videotape. She may have taken it. The only other videotape that went on was when the Warrens came. They had a gentleman with them, and he videotaped everything. He videotaped from the time they came in to the time they left.
Now, explain again about that bed. You had a very large bed in the one room.
And in the one bedroom, there was a bed, a four-poster bed. And the bed would be, you'd go into the bedroom and the bed would be actually turned upside down. And to put it back the way it had to be put back up, we used to have to dismantle the bed to put it back, because you could not make it turn. It wouldn't fit.
The photographic evidence you took and the notes that you took about this, you and your husband decided at one point, okay, let's just get rid of all of this.
It actually wasn't our idea. People, it was like people would come. We had so many people come with different ideas. And one person would come and they'd say, now start documenting everything that happens. Take pictures, make notes. So we'd do that. That person tried to get rid of it, couldn't. So we'd keep all the notes and pictures and keep taking them. So the next person tried to come. And then this person would say, oh, no, get rid of all these pictures, destroy them, get rid of your notes. You're giving it power, keeping it here with all these things that are going on. So we would destroy everything. Well, when my husband passed away in 2012, I found a box of pictures that he had kept, negatives and pictures that he had put away in a box. He didn't keep them all because we must have had 1,000 pictures, but he kept over 100 pictures that he took some from every year and kind of kept them in a box. So because he was a hoarder, he had to keep everything. So when I found those pictures, that's what brought back a lot of the memories and made me decide to even have this book written.
We have an email that might answer the question about the design, the fire triangle with the tail. A listener, Raul, sent in. He said, this image is taken from the 23rd image in a series of drawings from the 17th century alchemical work attributed to Eugenius Philathius, the Speculum Veritas, the Mirror of Truth. The simple symbol of a fire triangle with three radiating arrows below represents the perfect red king, the sulfur of philosophers. So that might be some insight. I'll forward that email on to you, Joey, so you've maybe got a little bit more for you if you do an update on the book and maybe be able to look a little bit more into what this image might mean and why it's there.
Well, interesting that it's the 17th century, because supposedly that's when he had that lifetime where Lee was supposed to be sacrificed, and it never happened.
Oh, that's right. Very, very bizarre. And we want to thank Raul for sending in that information and sharing that with us as well. And we'll, if you have questions and you can't get through on calls this evening, you can email me at dave@darknessradio.com. dave@darknessradio.com. We've got about 10 minutes left together in this segment. This complete battle went on for 6 years, mm-hmm. isolating you from friends and relatives, trying to break you down, trying to break your family down and claim the prize of your mother-in-law. And you did your best to fight and protect all the people involved in your family the very best you could. When this ended, were you able to feel a definite change? Was there a release that you knew that this thing was done with you and your family and you would no longer be under the torment?
Not at first. At first, it was like you were like waiting for the other shoe to drop. It was like you'd walk past the mirror. You didn't want to acknowledge anything, but your eyes would like dart in to look at the mirror to make sure there was nothing written on it. You know, it was like you were waiting for something to happen. And then a year would go by and the next year would go by. And we never talked about it. My mother-in-law wouldn't talk about it. We had it just, it was like it never happened. Couldn't talk to people about it. So we just wait for, and then finally it was like, wow, maybe it's not coming back. And then 25 years and not a thing.
Another interesting insight. Rayanne on Twitter says, I wonder if the triangle with the tail somehow represents the spear that was
the spear
teleported.
We took to the Natural History Museum 25 years ago. We were told by two gentlemen there that it was from the Belgian Congo area. It was over 200 years old, and they believed it belonged to some type of shaman because it is pointed and sharp, but the sides were not sharpened. It wasn't used for warfare, and it wasn't used for hunting. They said it was used in magical rituals by a shaman. So that is what we learned about the spear. And there's a strange thing that's still about the spear. I've shown the spear since I came out talking about the story to about seven people. Two of them didn't want to get near it, didn't want to even see it. Two of them were able to touch it and just said, you know what, this is very strange. They didn't want anything to do with it, but it was interesting. Three of the people wanted to give it blood. Oh. I had to actually take it away from them.
Wanted to give it blood. Does that mean that they were willing to bloodlet themselves?
Right.
To feed whatever this was?
I stopped showing it to people.
Wow. Yeah, and were these people that you trusted and knew? Or
these are people I have my friends. And they would say, they would take it, I said, what are you doing? They said, well, I'm going to give it some blood and see what happens. He said, no. And then after the third person did it, I put it away. I don't show it to anybody anymore. I have it in a safety deposit. In a bank.
So this thing literally was calling out to normal people,
yes.
Trying to convince it to feed it.
Well, the entity said this had to be used for the ritual. So it had some type of power in it.
Yeah, Debbie, at the museum, didn't they say that it was for human sacrifice?
Yes.
And did they wonder how you came into having this?
No, this is since I came out talking about it. I explained to them why I had it. This was in the last month.
Now, I think he was referring to the officials at the museum. Huh? Did they ask?
They did. They said, where did you get this from? And I remember my husband said to them, if we told you, you wouldn't believe us. Because how could you tell them, well, a demon apported it to us to use in the blood ritual? You can't tell people that.
Well, you can. You just probably go home in a padded vehicle, right? Things will change for you that way. And we're going to open up phone calls so people can talk to you directly. Again, folks, we do have to respect parts of this. These two have been very kind to spend the last 3 hours with us this evening and share the majority of the story. There is still much to be told, and there are some very frightening points. And again, I am trying to respect, it's the middle of the night for many people. Some people are trying to go to sleep. I don't want to leave them in complete points of terror or negativity. We won't be able to answer all your questions tonight because we do want to preserve the integrity of the book and give you some reasons to still pick the book up. It is out and available, just came out this last week. You can find it at barnesandnoble.com. You can find it on amazon.com. You can go directly to their site at adeadlyhaunting.com to find out about the book, see some of the pictures, the evidence, the writing on the mirrors, the spearhead itself. You said when your husband passed away that you found a box of evidence he had kept, and you didn't know that he had kept all these things.
No.
Have you had visitations from loved ones since their passing to let you know that they have been clear and free and that they were not interfered with by Mr. Entity at their time?
No, I haven't.
Have you had concerns that there may be something waiting for you and your family that may not be so pleasant?
The only one I worried about was my mother-in-law.
And your children, did they ever have any experiences?
No. They were, thank God, they were so small at the time. They don't have any recollection of it all. I didn't even tell them about this until I came out found the pictures. Until then, they didn't even know about it.
Susie writes in and she says, the man that explained the symbol referred to the mirror of truth. Weird, since the entity also liked to speak through a mirror.
That is true.
It's a compelling story. Your children, everybody is fine and safe now. You feel safe.
Yes.
What message would you want to give to the listeners about your experience and what they should do if they're going through this?
They should seek help and not keep it to themselves. You have to tell people what's going on. You can't just hide from it. You have to tell people what's going on. And of course, there's going to be some people that think you're nuts, some people that think you're just making it up, but there's going to be people out there that are going to believe you and are going to help you, and that's what you have to look for.
I also know, Joey, you wanted to give some recognition to a few people that helped with this book as well.
I did. Thank you for that. Meredith Quinn was the editor on the book, and she spent many, many hours poring over this and really helped make it a better work. So I'm very appreciative to her. My family, Linda, Randy, Don, Peyton, Derek, Chad, and Larry, you know, they've always been there for me, supported me in my life. And, you know, I had friends that read early versions of the book and gave very valuable feedback. So I really appreciate them as well. And I wanted to thank all the people that have been interested and supportive with this project and who've bought the book and have read it, and we very much appreciate you.
What do you hope people take away from the book, aside from the obvious? I mean, there are people who are going to be frightened by this, but what was the message that you felt was most important?
I think that just having an understanding of, you know, the different factors that were involved, the fear and negativity that the entity fed on, the fact that someone was giving it permission to be there, because there were some very, very powerful demonologists and spirit people that came who should have been able to get rid of this entity, but because it had permission to be there, you know.
It kept its stronghold. We're going to take our top of the hour break. Phone calls are open. We'll look forward to hearing from you next on Coast to Coast AM.